Welcome to Share Talk. Today we have Highlands Natural Resources on, and we've got a very full sort of board there. If you'd like to just introduce yourselves individually, please.
Hi, thank you, Stephen, for inviting us on Share Talk. This is Robert Price, the CEO of Highlands.
And this is Cully Kavnis. I'm the Vice President of Finance here at Highlands.
Domingo Mata, Vice President of Engineering.
And Paul Mandel, Exploration Manager.
Well, we've not covered you for a short while, so I would like to sort of do a very broad overview of all of the different projects you've got going on and where and what stages they're at. So if we start with the main one that Highlands Natural Resources is known for, and it's DT Ultravert product. Would you like to touch on that then, please?
Yes, Stephen. This is Robert again. When we originally founded Highlands, we started the process of filing numerous patents. And as of today, we have filed over 20 different patents with the United States Patent Office, the Canadian Patent Office here in the UK, and then international filings. And based on those filings and the process that we have for refracking new wells and parent well protection, we originally signed an agreement with Schlumberger. That agreement lasts for a period of time, and we renewed that agreement with Schlumberger. It provides for a royalty interest that Highlands will receive on every one of the refracts and parent well protections. After we signed the agreement with Schlumberger, we signed an agreement with CalFrac. And so we are delighted to share with both you and the listeners that we have done our very first test that has been previously announced to the market of DT Ultravert parent well protection. And I'd like Domingo Mata, who was formerly with Schlumberger, and I will say, Stephen, as the he was our champion within Schlumberger, and now that he joined us here full-time at Highlands, he is our champion within Highlands, and he markets DT Ultravert on a day-in and day-out basis. He oversees our DT Ultravert projects, including the parent well protection project that was performed in conjunction with Schlumberger and CalFrac in the Piceance Basin of Colorado.
Well, thank you, Robert, and thank you, Steve, for having us today.
My pleasure, Domingo. Thank you for joining us.
Excellent. So I'll brief you a little bit about the trial we had in the last quarter. It was, as Robert mentioned, in the Piceance Basin, and it was a good setup for the first trial for DT Ultravert, because in this area, when they were fracking the new wells, the fluid was invading the sections of the old wells and was actually bashing. So what they were doing is they were losing production on the existing wells, and they were under-stimulating the new wells. So it was a good setup for DT Ultravert. We went and applied with the help of Schlumberger. We applied the parent well protection in the existing well bores. Highlands provided all the technical advice about the volumes and the timing that should be between the injection and the actual new fracks in the new wells. So we had our partner Schlumberger in the existing wells injecting the gas, and we had our other partner, CalFrac, in the new wells, performing the primary fracks in those new wells. So at the end, the test results showed that Highland was able to prevent bashing in the existing wellbores, protecting all the wellbores in the vicinity, and also it improved the performance of the new wells. So the test was a success. And this actually resonated a lot in the industry.
So as Domingo mentioned, it's getting much attention in the United States, not only with major and independent oil and gas companies, but the media is picking it up on it as well, Stephen.
So
if I can just obviously simplify this for our listeners, obviously, like parent whale protection and batching, effectively, when you've got, say, three shale drills in a row, you need a nice stable platform so you're not creating pressure differentials under the ground. Thus, when one drill is producing, you then don't want to lower the pressure or the volume on that drill because it then becomes cost ineffective. And what your product is actually doing then is protecting the individual wells so that they can continue to produce at a predetermined level. And that obviously protects not only the income stream and the pumping of oil or gas plays, it also helps the environment. Would I be correct in saying that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good summary, Stephen.
If I could just add a couple more points. This is Cully Kavnis talking here. So,
hi there, Cully. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine, and thank you again for having us on the program. We're excited to be speaking with you. I'm sure you're familiar that publicly traded oil companies, they provide reserve reports and projections of their proved reserves, their producing reserves, but also their undeveloped reserves. And that's an important criteria for the valuation of these public oil and gas companies. And part of the process is understanding what are the nearby wells producing, and then that's extrapolated across the full acreage position. And it's assigned a value based on the expected production from the whole acreage position that a company has. What the industry is realizing is that as new wells are drilled offsetting old wells, the performance of those new wells is not necessarily coming on and performing as well as the original well because of depletion from the original well. And moreover, that new well is sometimes bashing the old well and reducing the production from the old well. So the combined effect is that bashing is causing the industry to potentially write down, in aggregate, it's going to be billions and billions of dollars of reserves if you really multiplied that effect across all of the shale basins and all of the public companies. So our technology is a potential solution for this problem, which the industry is beginning to grapple with. It's beginning to identify it, and financial parties that are lending to these companies are beginning to identify this and potentially write down the reserve base that they're able to lend against or invest against. So as you can see, that's a really important background and a setup for why DT Ultravert could be a revolutionary technology with a lot of value to the industry.
Thank you very much for that there, Cully. In regards to the other purposes of DT Ultravert then, obviously you've got the bashing there looking very favourable going forward, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more tests up and coming with that. What other sort of purposes do you have with that technology?
Well, we originally developed the technology for refracts, and we were getting ready to do a refrac with the technology in the Piceance Basin, but the operator came to us and shared with us the need to do parent well protection. And so we applied our first test for parent well protection. We're still in discussions with many parties, one particular party in the Denver-Julesburg Basin that will be doing a refrac there in the coming months after we work out the logistical needs with this operator. Domingo, as our champion at Highlands for DT Ultravert, has been meeting with several major and independent oil and gas companies as he presents the technology to them. In fact, he met last week with a fairly large independent where they have 25 engineers that he presented to. And this is his weekly schedule, meeting with several companies trying to develop and roll out the technology, not only in the refract part of DT Ultravert, but also the parent well protection.
So in regards to sort of news flow expected with the DT Ultravert, what is the sort of aims and goals there? And is there any sort of timescales you would like to potentially put against it?
I wouldn't put any time scales against it right now, Stephen. We're dealing with large oil and gas companies, independent oil and gas companies. Our partner, Schlumberger, of course. And we don't roll it out overnight, new technologies. But if we said before, this could be a disruptive technology in the oil and gas industry. And it takes time. But we continue day in, day out, every week, every month to develop more contacts in the industry and to share with them what our technology can do for their oil and gas production.
I agree with the sentiment. Slow is possibly better. Obviously, fracking isn't a sort of age-old technology, and technology is still moving within the fracking sort of industry. But it is a massive industry. How do you perceive that you're going to influence that industry going forward, being obviously a small company, but with a major product?
Yes. Well, we recently announced a competent persons report that puts the NPV10 value of DT Ultravert patent filings between 78 million and 135 million. And so what we have done is we have set up a plan where we can make sure that we hit those refract targets and those parent well targets to make sure that that CapEx royalty-free income comes in to really solidify that number on the RPS report.
And this is Cully again. I'm sure you can appreciate the need for proof points and for data in the sales process. Domingo can explain a lot about how valuable that is as he goes to meet with these potential clients. But the more data that we collect from our initial tests and we're able to show these clients, the more effectively we can sell to new potential clients. And of course, you know, there will be a tipping point where we get additional projects completed and we'll have a larger set of data and proof points to base our sales pitch off of. It should become easier and easier as we go. But I think we're still in the building phase of collecting those initial results and making sure that we can show a compelling case to these clients.
And Steve and I would add that I would encourage some of the listeners. We are posting our first quarter corporate update on our website, and you can see the results of DT Ultravert on the parent well protection and see the graphs, and that is part of our marketing material as we move forward.
And that's what we're sharing. The key step here, Steve, was having the first trial and having such a success there is going to facilitate the marketing efforts. And we put together a marketing plan for the first half, and we're very committed to visiting many, many companies, large market caps, and also independent. And we're looking after identifying potential applications of DT Ultravert in different basins, and we're very hopeful on hitting our targets according to the CPR.
Excellent. Just the last sort of point then in reference to DT Ultravert, you've obviously got over 20 patents there pending for the technology. Can you just update us on what is happening with the patents, and is it a case of the patent offices, both obviously in the USA, UK, as well as the international patents, do they need to see some results to quantify that the purpose for the patents is actually allowable against the product?
It is not result driven. I mean, the process is patentable even before you do the process. So having the final results and how successful it is not a factor of issuing the patents. We have filed, particularly with the U.S. Patent Office, expedited filing fees, and so we are getting results, and we'll get the patents issued over a period of time.
Is there any indications as to what that period of time is? And if there's going to be potentially any issues rolling the technology out before the patents are granted?
That's a good question, Stephen. I really appreciate you asking it. Our legal team assures us that everything is moving forward to have patents issued, but it takes a certain amount of time to get them issued. In the meantime, it's great that we are testing the technology as we have the patent process moving forward.
Right. Thank you very much for that. Is there anything further you would like to add in reference to the DT Ultravert?
That pretty much sums up the DT Ultravert. And again, we'll have the corporate update on the website that anyone can go to and look at more specifics on DT Ultravert.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Right. Where would you like to go next? Would you like to go over to East Denver?
Well, I think East Denver we're very excited about in that it will provide cash flow early on for Highlands, but I think that it's appropriate to do an update on our Helios 2 project. Stephen, this is in the state of Montana where we're doing the dewatering play. We've leased over 105,000 acres. We've drilled two wells. The first well was drilled to the Muddy Formation, and we've been doing the dewatering process. The second well was drilled shallow, and that was to the Eagle Formation. And there's a real good corporate update on our website that shows pictures of the operations and gas flares and so forth. As we are in the dewatering process, I'd like Paul Mandel, our exploration manager, to share a little bit about the process, a little bit about the gas sampling methodology, and how we filled up our surface pit, and now we're in the process of drilling our disposal well in the next few months.
Sure. Thanks, Robert. With respect to sampling, initial samples were taken, what we call two-phase samples. The gas was commingled with the water. How do I explain this? So basically we've got a pump in the well and we're pumping up water and the water is very gassy. So we take a sample, a two-phase sample, and, it's a difficult and challenging thing to do that. Recently we have developed enough gas pressure on what we call the annular space, which is the space between the tubing and the casing, so that we can take a pure gas sample. There's no water associated with it. And we recently did that, and the results can be shared.
Yeah, the results are public now, yes.
The results are public. So that's how we sampled the gas. We've got some good data. And the dewatering process is an interesting process. We believe that gas exists basically in the finer pore throats of the sandstone, and predominantly the larger pore throats of the sandstone are water-bearing. So you can't get access to the finer pore throats unless you empty the larger pore throats, which means dewatering. So we began dewatering process some time ago. We had some issues with pumps. We recently changed the pump, had some real good success drawing reservoir pressure down, and no surprise, we began to get gas pressure building.
So we will in the spring in Montana, we'll drill our disposal well. We have received all the permitting with the state of Montana and the Environmental Protection Agency to begin disposing water in our disposal zone. And so we will drill that disposal well in the coming spring.
And it might be worth just touching on the gas sampling that Paul mentioned. Which was just released yesterday. And so we collected some initial samples and just want to clarify exactly what the process has been. We've received some questions from investors on this. So the initial samples, as Paul mentioned, were two-phase. They included water and gas dissolved in that water, which came out of solution. And it was a difficult process that resulted in atmospheric intrusion and contamination in the sampling containers. And so when those samples were sent out to the laboratories, we had a pretty wide range of results, and we determined that those were really preliminary results. We saw that helium was contained in the gas, but it was hard to know exactly what the concentration was because there was clearly also air entering into those sample bottles. So we actually worked with some experts in the gas analysis and gas sampling industry, and they helped us get a second generation of tests completed using optimized sampling methodologies and equipment, steel sampling tubes, and understand the methodology for evacuating air from those tubes and ensuring we had as pure a sample as possible. And so those are the results that were just released yesterday, showing results that were very much in line with our initial expectations, 0.31 to 0.33% helium, 90% methane. So this was really Paul's initial hypothesis for what we would find here, and it was nice to see it validated by those results.
In relation, obviously, to the collecting and sampling of the gas, if there's an issue earlier on with obviously collecting it, how do you develop a field as big as the acreage that you've got there and ensure that there's no cross-contamination of the product as and when and if you obviously start producing it?
That's another good question, Stephen. We've been in contact with many of the major air products companies. They've done this in the Hugoton field, which is the largest accumulation of helium in the U.S., and that supply is slowly being depleted, and industry is looking for other domestic supplies of helium in the U.S., and so it's a pretty standard technique in gathering it in the industry now.
There are dozens of plants throughout the United States and across the world where helium is refined and extracted from a predominantly methane stream. And obviously, once you build enough volumes where you have a continuous gas phase, it's much easier to collect and transport and treat that gas as compared to just the initial days and weeks of dewatering where you have, you know, a water-saturated situation, and it's harder to separate the gas in those initial phases.
So effectively, there will be some sort of workover required initially, and then there should be a constant stream of obviously the gases, etc., for transportation and sale to the market.
It's more a function of dewatering the reservoir. So if and when the reservoir is effectively dewatered, and then you would expect the gas production rate to increase, and you'd have that continuous gas phase. And at that point, it's essentially being treated as a normal gas well.
Obviously, the market was looking potentially at there being the helium in place. Could you just let everyone know your thoughts upon that obviously now confirmed figure of 0.31% to 0.33%? And what are the hopes and expectations of that being across the entire acreage based upon what you know about the asset?
Well, one never knows as far as the extent, but what you have is two data points, and they're one confirms the other. The initial data point, I think, was taken in 1969, if I recall. And this data, which is, 2 miles away, supports that. In general, the gas appears to be what we call biogenic in nature. It's not gas that was cooked in place. It was generated by bacterial decay of organic matter. And in general, in the northern states, when you have biogenic methane generation, it's pervasive. So with respect to the methane, it should be in a large regional area. Now, helium is another matter. The source of helium is different, but there's no reason to think that it wouldn't be a regional occurrence, too, in maybe some variance of that concentration. Could be better. It might be smaller.
So if we took that as an average, then, what are the economic certainties of it being a field that you can obviously generate income based upon the helium?
Well, I think Cully can speak to the economics, but basically it's the economics are driven by methane. The helium would be a byproduct, as it always is. All the major sources of helium in the world are always a byproduct of methane production. There has only been one, that I know of, there's only been one occurrence of a pure helium-driven project, and that lasted a few years in Arizona in a field called Pentadome. They had very high concentrations. I think it was 8 or 9, perhaps, percent, and the balance being nitrogen. But a totally different kind of setting geologically and very low pressure. So what I found, and this doesn't mean it's true everywhere, but what I found is you can have high concentrations of helium in spots in the world, but in general, they're of low pressure. And as you know, gas is a compressible fluid. So if you have low pressure, you generally have very low volume. We, on the other hand, have, you might say, relatively small concentrations compared to, say, Pentadome, but we have 1,800 pounds of bottom hole pressure. And that's a significant factor that you have to take into account when you're addressing the volume of gas in place.
And so to your direct question, Stephen, is the RPS competent persons report with the acreage that we originally had, which was approximately 69,000 acres, they put with this percentage, the 0.31 to 0.36, they put the average of being 2.1 BCF of helium. And at today's prices of over $100 per MCF, it's very significant.
So not only is it obviously going to lower the operational expenditure, obviously being a byproduct of the field you're in, but the methane's the main driver. The helium, obviously, as a standalone product, is almost sort of good enough on its own entity to sell to the market against those figures.
Absolutely, Stephen. And if you look at, again, the competent person report, they showed a PV10 value of just the methane on only 69,000 acres. Keeping in mind, we now have 105,000 acres, but that PV10 value was $341 million, and that was just the methane. As you just pointed out, the helium is on top of that.
So in regards, obviously, to looking forward then, you can potentially say that the updated NPV10 could be circa $500 million with the additional acreage you've got there. And obviously adding in the helium as well, it could be potentially a lot higher. Yeah, what are the plans looking forward with the field for having a bigger sort of project in place? You've done the two drills. You've obviously got to a certain point where you now know what's down there. You know what value's attributed to it. What's the next step forward?
Well, Stephen, we were making great progress with the dewatering process. We had a surface pond that held over 220,000 barrels of water. We filled that pond up. We were originally producing over 2,000 barrels of water a day during the process. We put a new subsurface pump in, got up to close to 5,000 barrels of water a day. And after we did that change, we saw the gas significantly increase. And that's where we were able to get that pure sample of gas. And so we haven't proven the play right now. We need to have a longer test. We need to have the disposal well drilled so we're not limited by the amount of water that we can dispose of on the surface pond. So this will take time, Stephen.
And from an engineering standpoint, Stephen, this is the normal process of this type of dewatering place when they are in an exploration phase. First, you need to understand what type of volumes you're going to get to achieve optimum dewatering, and you have to design your subsurface equipment for that. So we already accomplished that task. We have installed a submersible pump in place that can handle the fluids that we need to do to perform optimum dewatering. And now we're in the process of designing our injector, so that injector can allocate all that water we're going to produce. So we're we have permitted that well with the state of Montana and with the EPA, and we're expecting to produce that and start the drilling process in the spring.
Yes.
Is there anything further you would like to add on to that project then?
I don't think so at this point. I think that was pretty comprehensive, and we certainly appreciate your questions.
It's just obviously ascertaining as much information, and obviously we can go forward from there.
Okay.
So now, obviously, on to your next project, which is potentially as big as all of your others, if not bigger.
Do we get a little drum roll going to the next bigger project, which we're really excited about, Stephen?
I can tell you've been chomping at the bit.
yeah.
So, obviously.
Where
Paul, do you start with this one?
Oh, goodness. I will say, Paul Mandel, as our exploration manager, he's actually worked in the DJ Denver-Julesburg Basin for much of his career. There were many horizontal wells that defined this basin, and it became one of the hottest horizontal plays in the country, I would say probably second to the Permian, and close to the Williston Basin Bakken play. So many horizontal or vertical wells have been drilled defining it. We were very fortunate to enter into a farm out agreement with a small oil and gas producer called Renegade. And once we got a farm out agreement from Renegade, we entered into a farm out agreement with a major oil and gas company. And it is right in an area where ConocoPhillips has developed this certain part of the field, and many of their wells have produced over 100,000 barrels of oil a day. And so
in the first 6 months,
in the first six months, they will IP between 800 and 1200 a day. But Coley, would you please take Stephen through the overall concept and how we are fortunate enough to get this amount of acreage in a very hot play?
Yeah, and it really
just
is a project
to touch base, obviously, on the Colorado Basin. Renegade Oil and Gas actually have a major set of assets there, don't they?
They have they're right in the middle of ConocoPhillips, which was very fortunate to us to have a farm out agreement with them before we had entered into the other farm out.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And, you know, this is a project that we're all really passionate about here. It's right outside Denver where we're headquartered. And essentially the concept is that ConocoPhillips drilled in excess of 30 horizontal wells right neighboring our acreage position. And those wells, especially the second generation of those wells where they went to 2 mile wells with very large fracs and optimized completions, those second-generation wells are among the 5% of the top 5% of the entire DJ Basin population of horizontal Niobrara wells, which is more than 2,000 wells. So knowing that we are right next door to some of the very best wells in the entire basin, we're extremely fortunate to have the position that we do have, which is we're able to drill up to 24 similar wells. In fact, we're trying to emulate those Conoco wells identically, and to do so in rock that's just adjacent. So it makes it easy for our engineering firms that we contract to project our production potential. It makes it easy for them to understand what's probable, what they consider to be proved. And in fact, RPS, which gave us our competent persons report, allocated a net present value, 10% discount rate, of between $100 to $125 million for these 24 well bores. And actually 78% of that value they allocated to a proved category. And that's because they had such compelling results just immediately offsetting us. And also because, as Robert mentioned, there are so many vertical penetrations throughout this area. You have very good control of the reservoir by being able to look at the well logs and understand, okay, yes, the reservoir continues from Conoco's position down into our farm out. And so on that basis, we view this as a pretty well de-risked project from a reservoir and from a geologic perspective. There's obviously some operational risk, and really the biggest challenge at this point is financing the project. It's obviously a capital intensive one, but we're well advanced on a number of fronts in raising that money in a manner that will be minimally dilutive for our common equity holders at the PLC level. You know, we're trying to finance this through conversations with private equity, with third party debt, industry partnerships. All those methods we are aiming to have be minimally dilutive for the common equity shareholder.
So in relation to the project, obviously it is de-risked. You have obviously had previous discussions of Renegade Oil. ConocoPhillips are obviously next door to you. There must be a big host of people wanting to potentially get on board and obviously help themselves to potentially what could be, a big operating field in a well-known area that has obviously got good infrastructure in place.
And we have had some of our industry partners and some of our financing partners were in advanced discussions on moving the drilling of the project forward.
In relation, obviously, to bringing on the wells that you hope, one question I've got going forward is, would it be better to do a staged increase in wells, or are you going to go for the whole development program?
That's a very good question, and it's an approach we've taken as well. So it's possible to stage it out. There are pros and cons to, drilling some initial wells to further delineate the acreage and then following on with the remainder of the wells. But there are also some operational advantages to doing it all at once. And we are, it's partially a function of the financing again, and we're just working forward with both options on the table at this point.
And Stephen, many small oil and gas companies like ourselves really do not get the opportunity to get this type of acreage that's very low risk, that really provides us and our partners a good rate of return and payout within a year to 2 years.
And obviously, going back to what Highlands Natural Resources do, and it's obviously out there in black and white, the way that you actually want to operate and your ethos is established in getting, or acquiring, should I say, oil and gas assets, which are commercial and almost ready to go. So again, it's a good ethos going forward. Obviously, there are several people out there that say you've got this massive potential. Is anything going to be able to be done with it?
Well, we're very close to doing that, and we should be drilling wells as far as news flow, several wells by the 1st of May with our farm out agreements and our financing partners. Let me say, Stephen, this was the longest interview we ever had. Your questions were very insightful, and I really appreciate the interchange back and forth, because I believe we really have the opportunity to share with you and your listeners more about Highlands and how we're advancing and building shareholder value to the best of our ability.
Well, the way I see it, and if I can be open and candid, with the downturn in the markets, not a lot of people want to get invested in companies because they don't see the potential. And what you've acquired, for instance, some of the acreage you've acquired is at $10 per acre, which back then with the exchange rates was around about £5 per acre. Now, that's the price of two pints of beer. Now, if you can turn that 1 acre into £100,000, then that's a very good upside potential based upon sound acquisitions and a good portfolio going forwards. And you seem to have a broad mix and a broad ethos going forward, and you're not just sticking to one type of play. You've got your gas, you've got your helium, you've got oil in play, you've got fracking technology in play. And all I'm going to say is, based upon where your market cap is versus against your NPV and where you should be, where do you see that gap closing? What news flow will the market want to see in place to get your company to be where it should be?
Oh, Stephen, that's the big question. We can't predict exactly where the stock will go. All we do is work very hard day in and day out to advance these projects. And as you very astutely pointed out, if with these competent person reports, there's certain risks on our projects. And again, I would encourage the listeners to go to our website and look at our corporate update, and you can see how the East Denver project is very low risk, and the others have a certain level of risk. But it's the competent person's report speaks to hundreds of millions of dollars of value. When that equalizes out, given our efforts to advance each one of those projects, I can't predict that, Stephen.
Is there anything else you or any of the other members there would like to add?
I'm just appreciative that you took the time, and to each and every one of the listeners that will take the time to listen to this podcast, thank you. And thank you for your interest in Highlands Natural Resources.
Thanks, Robert, very much, Stephen.
Charles.
Thank you, Stephen.
Domingo, Paul, and Cully, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. And thank you very much for your time.
Okay, take care. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye, Stephen.
Bye.
Bye.